afternoon, everyone. Call the Joint Judiciary, what? Joint Judiciary Committee?
Disjointed, maybe?
Is this, you use a cut and paste or something?
Who's got the joint?
Okay, we do know it's Monday, February 28th. We got that part right. Present Representative Lynn, Representative Keller, Representative Pruitt, Vice Chair Thompson, myself, Chair Gatto, and Representative Gruenberg is right up the hall working on something. We'll get him in just a few minutes. As before, if you have a cell phone, disable it. Today's agenda, HB 127, Crimes Involving Minors / Stalking. We do have a CS, so I will ask my vice chair to take care of that issue for us.
Representative Gatto, I move to bring the committee committee substitute for House Bill 127, version 27-GH1840/M, before the committee for discussion.
Thank you. And that's M like Mike. Is there an objection? Without objection, we have the CS before us. And Representative Lynn, I think you have, this would be a different amendment number now because we have the CS of the amendment M
we
got one.
We haven't approved it yet. Or
it could be amendment one.
Mr. Chair, what would the number be on that now?
M1,
just like a rifle.
We have to move it again or just go with what we had?
Well, you have to move it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move amendment to M1 to CS for House Bill number 127.
Okay, Representative Lynn, why don't you tell us what M1 does for us?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, we put a lot of thought into this amendment, and I know that our estimable Department of Law has some concerns with it, but we've also heard from our own attorneys at Ledge Legal that they could see certain situations where prosecutors could make this charge stick with the amendment, but couldn't go to trial with the underlying sex offense. And this would be, I think, a great tool for plea bargains if we had to go that route and for making sure that no sexual predators fall through the cracks in the system. And at your pleasure, Mr. Chairman, my staff could speak a little bit extra on this if you would like.
I think that's what I would like. Thank you.
Okay. Sure. And this relates to the false caller ID, and that's not the only thing, as the staff will explain.
For the record, my name is Thomas Riker, and I'm staff to Representative Bob Lynn. Through the chair, members of the committee, the original motivation of this amendment was to stop people from using false caller ID to commit sex crimes, which is, you know, basically where you download a software that misrepresents your cell phone or telephone number as someone else's, and in some cases, you can even use that software to target how you're misrepresented. So it's not just some random number that shows up, but you might show up as the Anchorage School District or the Anchorage Police Department, and that was really what we wanted to guard against here. When we drafted the amendment, though, we heard from Ledge Legal that the criminal impersonation statute that's already on the books covers false caller ID, and we didn't want to further narrow the law by putting a specific mention of false caller ID in this amendment. As such, this amendment would also cover people who use a false Facebook account, instant messaging profile, or email account to lure in innocent victims.
I want to do that. I want to make a false Facebook account on you. So I know your name. Mm-hmm. I don't know your address. I know where you work. How do I actually do it?
Through the chair.
If you don't, I mean, it's. I think it helps us if we kind of know how criminals think.
Mr. Chair, if you knew, say, what kind of person you wanted to target, if you know that you're looking for, I don't know, a 13-year-old who's interested in science fiction, because that's going to be your way to lure them into, you know, leaving their parents and coming to meet you. You know, you could certainly search for someone of that age and those interests on Facebook, and you could create a profile that says, you know, my date of birth says I'm 14 when in reality I'm 40, and then I just go ahead and have the same conversation with you I would have had anyway, but you're under the impression that I'm a 14-year-old, not a 40-year-old, and so you don't perceive it as a threat to your personal safety. I would see that as being the most likely situation that you would run into, where somebody's misrepresenting their age as opposed to necessarily lying through their teeth in every other aspect of the conversation.
So that's if I want to lure a minor. Mm-hmm. But what if I want to impersonate a minor by taking a Facebook page with Bob Lynn's name and establishing an account of this person and then publishing things on Facebook with the name of the person I'm trying to get after and destroy a reputation from? Is that a doable thing, or does that require that I know your Social Security number, your driver's license number, your mother's maiden name, your date of birth, your schools you went to, or is it easy?
Mr. Chair, it is relatively easy, because if I offer a different date of birth, you could have a pre-existing Facebook account, for instance, and if I offer a different date of birth than the one you've offered for Carl Gatto, Facebook is just going to assume it's a different Carl Gatto and let me go ahead and set up a profile. So you're right, it is relatively easy. Also, and Ledge Legal could speak to this as well, but really the function of the current statute that we're looking at here as far as sex crimes is a person commits the crime of criminal impersonation in the second degree if the person assumes a false identity and doesn't act in the assumed character with the intent to defraud, commit a crime, or obtain a benefit to which the person is not entitled. So the crime they're committing is a sex crime, or you could also look at it as the benefit that they're obtaining is your trust in furtherance of a sex crime.
Is a benefit if I destroy your reputation? Is that a benefit that's defined in according to this language?
I believe that would be covered under criminal impersonation in the first degree. Actually, it says damages the financial reputation of the other person, although I think you could certainly make the argument that if somebody's out there making, you know, harassing or inappropriate statements under your name, it's going to damage your financial reputation. But
there's a whole lot more than, you know, I don't want you to damage my financial reputation, but my reputation in general is something that it took me a lot of years to develop. There are certain people that trust me. It can be undone fairly quickly.
Right.
And if the punishment should be at least as severe as my financial reputation, because most of us would recognize that how people think of you is a pretty important part of how you behave yourself. So is that something that's not addressed in the bill?
Mr. Chair, and the lawyers could obviously speak to this, but the criminal impersonation statute also includes misrepresenting yourself in order to commit a crime. And so if the information that they're putting out there rises to the level of harassment, as is covered in this bill, and that's one of the things that we as staffers had talked about, making sure that if someone is, you know, maliciously using the internet to harass or annoy you, that is covered in this bill. You know, if it rises to the level of harassment under this bill, then that would be a crime, and that would be covered under the criminal impersonation statute. That would be the crime that they're committing with their impersonation is harassment.
Any comments from the committee? I'm going to take a brief at ease while I try to Representative Grubenberg. I'm going to have to get him to show up here, so we'll go at ease for off the record momentarily. Okay, we've been joined by Representative Grubenberg. Representative Grubenberg, we're dealing with Amendment M1 offered by Representative Lynn. Do you have M1 available? Here you go.
Let me just take a quick look here.
We'll give you time to take a look, sure.
I have M1, yeah. Here you go. This is the new Lynn Amendment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we should not use the other one, right?
Yeah,
right.
Amendment number one has never passed, so it's...
Okay, so we're not using Amendment number
one. A1, I think it was.
Okay, so this is superseded.
Well, Mr. Chair, it was moved, but it wasn't acted upon, so do we have to remove the old one?
Or no, we just don't take it off.
So we can go with this
one. We never voted on it, so it doesn't
We just don't take it off the table.
Okay.
Okay, so now is this, what number is this?
M1.
No, but do we have a, we should have a, no, it's a new amendment number one. Okay, amendment number one, okay. May I just inquire, since I came in late, what does this do? I assume we've adopted the MCS.
Correct. Done.
Okay, so may I ask Tom what...
Sure,
what
go ahead. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, this amendment doesn't add a new crime or mandate any prosecution, but it does raise the penalty for criminal impersonation in the second degree to a B felony if someone misrepresents their identity in furtherance of a sex crime. So if the intended crime, if the under the intended underlying crime, or I guess you could also look at it as the intended benefit to be obtained, is a sex offense, then it would bump up criminal impersonation in the second degree. You know, we understand that there are some laws or some violations in the existing sex crimes that are mentioned, referred to in this act, that are misdemeanors, but then it becomes a matter of prosecutorial discretion. We want to give them an extra, vehicle to plead these cases out and also conceivably something that they could charge in instances where they don't feel comfortable going ahead with the underlying sex crime. So,
what is the difference between... I see one difference.
Between A1 and M1?
Yeah, between A1 and on the first line, it says following minor, and this says following minors. What are the differences here between the two?
Through the chair, I don't have the A1 amendment. I just have the M1 amendment in front of me. But to the there shouldn't be any difference in the language.
So. There's a little one. In A1, it says following minors, plural. In M1, it says following minor. And then insert criminal impersonation. So we're deleting page 1, line 3, the word minor or minors.
No, it's just following minor. We're not doing that at all.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It looks to me like just here's a typo.
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunberg, it should be minors. It should be consistent with the language in the CS. I don't know why there's a discrepancy there.
So.
Okay. So. Okay.
Representative Thompson?
Yes, Chairman Gatto. I'm still a little confused if this is already covered under online enticement or not. I mean, I'm kind of confused.
Through the chair, we do not feel that it is only because there are other technologies such as false caller ID that we feel fall into this nexus of crimes that we're looking at, or nexus of activities that we're looking at as well. So if the activity isn't online, if it's through the telephone, or I guess conceivably through text messages as well, that's something that we want to be covered under this amendment. So in addition to the fact that online enticement of a minor could conceivably have a different set of facts than criminal impersonation would require.
Continue?
May I?
Yes. Let them finish.
And then out of curiosity, it's not a B felony. 1146-570 is already a crime of impersonation?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, right now it's a Class A misdemeanor, and this would only elevate it to a B felony if the underlying crime is a sex offense, which... I believe, yeah, which brings it in line with criminal impersonation in the first degree. So basically, the act you would be committing would be criminal impersonation in the second degree, but because it's in furtherance of a sex offense, it bumps you up into the same category as people who've committed criminal impersonation in the first degree.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunberg.
I don't know if the members have the two statutes that are relevant here, and I'm trying to see in my packet if I do. Okay, why don't you do that, Sarah? Okay, I think to for people to make sense out of this, they need to have the two statutes, which are 565 and 570 in front of them. Otherwise, this won't. Somebody's doing that? Okay, it looks to me like what you're doing in this, maybe you have it here. It looks to me like what you're doing here is saying right now there's a crime called criminal impersonation in the second degree. And that is a statute that you commit if you assume a false identity with the intent to defraud or commit a crime, or you pretend to be a representative of some person, and you do one act in the pretended capacity. It's a Class A misdemeanor currently. And what the amendment does is to say that, and this is criminal impersonation in the first degree, and it says if you do what I've just said, and the crime intended is a sex offense, which is defined in AS 1263-100, then you bump it from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class B felony, which is a significant jump. And I think that the definition, do we have a definition of 1263-100? Because people need to see what a sex defense is, otherwise they can't tell what you're talking about.
Page, what she just passed out?
Is that what you did?
I believe, yes, right here, sir.
I see. Okay, and this defines, and it references other statutes which you have to look at. 1141-100. I'm not familiar with these by memory either.
Well, we can get some other people up here. Actually, I need a volunteer from the audience. I don't know if it's Doug or Annie or who. Annie the volunteer? Oh, please come up. There's only one chair.
I can probably help you a little bit with these span sites.
Okay. Because one of the troubles the committee's having, we have A1, M1 plus the bill, and which is a CS, and to be able to put all our thoughts in an organized manner is troubling.
I think we're all confused.
Yeah.
Oh, except me. Okay. No, I know I'm confused.
A sex offense, you have to start at 6A of 1263. 100. And, we probably should start with what an aggravated sex offense is, and that is 100 is, I believe, murder, felony murder, when the underlying attempt is underlying crime is a sex offense.
So you're saying that if your underlying, you wanted to force sex on somebody and you murder them in the process?
Well, if you were committing a felony like kidnapping and you moved somebody and they got killed in the process and you intended to commit a sexual offense, that would be, that is considered a sex offense. And this definition is for sex offender registration purposes. People who come into these categories are sex offenders and they have to register as a sex offender. And then B is also felony murder in the second degree, and the underlying crime was intended to be a sex offense. And then sexual assault in the first and the second degrees, and sexual abuse of a minor in the first and the second degrees. And then also included in the definition of aggravated sex offense is a crime of an attempt, solicitation, or conspiracy to commit a rape or sexual assault in the first degree or sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree. Then child kidnapping, which is, sex offense. You don't have a child kidnapper in your amendment, right? You just want it to be sex offense. Okay.
No.
Well, we'll go down then to sex offense. Paragraph 6 covers also felony murder in the first degree, felony murder in the second degree, and these are when sex offense is intended as the underlying offense. Sexual assault in the first degree, sexual assault in the second degree, sexual abuse of a minor in the first and second degree, an attempt, solicitation, or conspiracy to commit any of the sex offenses, sexual assault first, second, third, and fourth degree. I'm sorry, I have to look that up. 1440, 1440, 1440. Just a minute. I think. And that's, paragraph 6C, little I is all sex offenses, sexual assaults, and all sexual abuse of a minor, except for sexual abuse of a minor in the fourth degree, which is a misdemeanor. And then two I's are sexual abuse of a minor in the fourth degree under A2, which covers being 18 years of age or older, the offender engages in sexual contact with a person who is 16 or 17, at least 3 years younger than the offender, and occupies a position of authority in relation to the victim, such as a teacher or coach or something like that. So it doesn't. So one of the two ways of committing sexual abuse of a minor in the fourth degree, Class A misdemeanor, is not considered a sex offense under our sex offender statutes. 1141.450 to 1440.458 cover incest, online enticement of a minor, unlawful exploitation of a minor, and indecent exposure in the first degree.
Did you say 1141.458?
458, yes. That's indecent exposure in the first degree. That's a registrable offense. Then I-5, or Roman numeral 4, is indecent exposure in the second degree if the victim is under 16 and the offender, it's a second or subsequent offense for the offender. 1161.125 to 1128 are the provisions dealing with child pornography offenses. One twenty-five is distribution of child pornography. 127 is possession of child pornography. 128 is distribution of indecent material to minors. So we're up to Roman numeral 6. 1166.110 or 1130, and that's inducing a minor to engage in prostitution. And then 7 refers to crimes that were committed before a criminal code.
Let me go back to 110,
sure.
Part 2 there. If the person who was induced or caused to engage in prostitution was 16 or 17 years of age,
right?
Why just the 2 years?
Well, under 1166.110, promoting prostitution in the first degree, that's inducing a person under 18 years of age to engage in prostitution, then 130 is.
We have time. Yeah, I see you're going like a whiz there, fast as the wind.
Yeah. Well, I guess A2 would be a person who is not a patron of the prostitute induces a person.
I guess the question I have is, does age 16 or 17 up the ante on responsibility, while age is 15 and under is a lesser crime?
You know what? I think what it is that these prostitution offenses deal with 16 or 17-year-olds because children under 16 are dealt with sexual abuse of a minor in other parts of our statute. And then 1161.118.A2 is the harassment provision that was passed last year. If you'll remember, the quick grab, that was a kind of a rude way of saying it, but people who touch other people through clothing before the victim has time to communicate his or her lack of consent, that was adopted as a Class A misdemeanor form of harassment last year in House Bill 298 and SB 222 that you worked on. And I don't know, that's what we called it in our office. It's not very nice. That was.
I hate to say this, but suppose you're at the airport going through TSA and they didn't advise you of what they were going to do. But they do. But if they didn't, would they be in violation of state law then?
Let's look at that provision, 1161.118. I think it's that's under the harassment law, so you have to, we have to prove that the person did this act with intent to annoy or harass another person. So if they did it with just, you know, forgetting the fact that they had not told the person that they were going to do what they planned to do, I don't think it would be a crime because we couldn't prove that they intended to.
I think for another reason, too, Mr. Chair, Ms. Carpinetti, if they're doing this pursuant to the TSA federal regulations, they would have immunity under federal law because federal law is supreme. I'm probably mixing up my technical terms, but you couldn't prosecute them because the federal law authorizes them to do it.
That's correct, too. So those are, I hope that was helpful.
Unfortunately.
Everything's helpful. Yes, it is.
Before she leaves, I might have something that changes a little bit.
Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Chair Gatto. The way I've been trying to, and I can't find what I was looking at, but if they don't go ahead with a sex crime prosecution, how could they prove criminal impersonation is a furtherance of a sex crime? Wouldn't that make it kind of hard to prosecute?
Through the chair, yes. It does make it difficult. I mean, I can't imagine an example of where we could do that.
Representative Grunberg?
I can understand the desire. What I think Representative Lynn is trying to get at here is, and you gentlemen correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you're doing a sex crime and you're furthering it by fraud, you want to make that a more serious offense. Am I correct? That's your goal?
That's part of it, yes.
What is the rest of it?
Thomas? Why, I heard the guy.
I mean, that's what it seems to me the amendment gets at.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, it's not just to make the sex offense, or the goal is not to make the underlying sex offense somehow a worse crime if fraud is involved, but to make the criminal impersonation a worse crime if the intent is to commit a sex offense. And originally, our intention, as I stated earlier, was to add language directly related to false caller ID. However, when we conferred with Ledge Legal and realized that the current criminal impersonation statute more than likely covers false caller ID, we didn't want to narrow down that statute by putting in a specific reference to an individual type of technology. So instead, we amended the entire criminal impersonation statute.
Which then covers caller ID?
That, through Mr. Chair, that is the opinion that we got from Ledge Legal, yes.
So under caller ID, I phone you and it has Wes Keller's name shows up. And you say, hi, Wes. And I go, hey, how you doing? And then you assume that I'm Wes and we have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Is that how it works?
Through the chair, yes. That is how it works. But again, to be covered under criminal impersonation statute, you would have to be impersonating Representative Keller in order to commit a crime or attain a benefit to which you're not entitled.
And that's about the only reason I'd do it.
Right.
It could be a practical joke, you know, but it could cause him harm if somebody says, you know, you're an idiot and hangs up. Now what do I do? Call up and say, hey, it's really not him.
And Representative Groom, through the chair, I would also point out that, Ms. Carpinetti was very honest and straightforward when she said that we did, you know, work very closely on this, that we had several conversations, that she had conversations with Ledge Legal, and so we would not have moved forward had we not received opinions from our own lawyers at Ledge Legal that they could foresee instances where this would be prosecutable and the underlying sex offense might not, or where a prosecutor might want to use this to plead out a case. Had we been told by our own lawyers, there is no foreseeable instance where this statute would be used in place of the underlying sex offense, we would not have moved forward with this amendment.
The other thing that it strikes me, and I don't know why the statutes, these are very confusing. When these statutes were originally drafted, Title 11, it was done under the auspices of the Criminal Code Revision Commission, in the late 1970s. And these, the criminal code before that, were from the territorial days with a few changes. But then it was felt that those were outdated and kind of hodgepodge. So they formed an omnibus commission with just judges and justices, criminal prosecutors and lawyers, and it was a really kind of a blue ribbon commission at the time. And they revised the whole thing. And that's where the current criminal code comes from. Since then, the legislature has, and I'm going to say tinkered with it, that's not really necessarily a good term, but taken laws here, there, and sort of done these in not a very organized way. And this, to me, these two statutes here that we have here, which are criminal impersonation in the first and second degree, I think are an example of that, because you got some things that are Class A misdemeanors, and then you bump up to a Class B felony. There's nothing in between. And I do not know why that was done. Mr. Chair, if I could ask Ms. Carpinetti, do you know why there's nothing that's a Class C felony? Why is it either Class A misdemeanor and then a Class B felony?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, I'm just looking through the other ways that you can commit first degree and then thereby create a Class B felony, and I imagine that it was because the harm, when, for example, if you used criminal impersonation to obtain a credit card of somebody or a social security number and were able to open a checking account, and you would, and that's very, very harmful to people, as we've all heard how difficult it is to clear our reputation after somebody's stolen our identity. I think that was probably the reason that the potential harm of stealing somebody's identity and then using it to, and having the effect of ruining their financial reputation was pretty serious conduct and was very harmful to a victim. That's what I'm imagining. I'm sorry, I can't be more specific.
Well, it strikes me.
It is a big jump from a misdemeanor to a Class C.
It really is. And it strikes me, I wasn't here when this was done in 2000, but the term, if you look at the bill, it's AS 1146565A1C, which is on lines 15 and 16 of the amendment, recklessly damages the financial reputation of another person. That doesn't necessarily, I suppose it does require a specific an intent. But the recklessly damaging, that portion, you must know what you're doing, but you may not really fully intend to damage. It's a reckless, and you could damage somebody very slightly by lowering their credit rating a few points. I mean, to me, this isn't the best drafted statute in the world, and I sort of say that as an aside because, you know, you could, if you're a merchant, you could erroneously, maybe even recklessly, say somebody didn't pay their bill, put it into a credit bureau, and you find the guy's credit goes down, and thereby you committed a Class B felony. And I think at some point, as long as we're looking at things we might look at some point, this may be a candidate. My thought is I don't know if you want to go down this trail on this amendment. I can understand the sex problem, and I think that's important. But some of these other things, at some point, you may want to take a look at.
I think we should take a look at it before we let this bill out. And here's the plan on this bill. There's no more meetings this week. And then next week, we have Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And I'm not here Monday and Wednesday, so my vice chair will run the meeting. I would hope that on Friday, we would have accumulated everything we need to accumulate so that we would feel comfortable, bring the bill to a vote, and pass it if it passes, and hold it if it doesn't. I expect it will pass, but I sure like it to pass in a better form than when we find an issue that looks correctable or can be made better, that we actually deal with it. I mean, we have first-class law people on the committee and in the audience to help us, so why wouldn't we do that? Representative Grunberg.
I've already volunteered.
And I was about to thank you for doing that.
for 150, and I've got a few dozen other things. I'd be happy to work on this whole thing with folks who are interested, again, under our able direction over here. But this is looking at something that gets us into another area, and I'm happy to, don't get me wrong, I'm happy to do it, but I think we should really look at the way these things are done.
I understand. I felt like you did. Recklessly damages. Well, damage has a million degrees of whatever it is, degrees. And recklessly, for me, it might have been reckless. For someone else, it might have been appropriate. But it always goes before the same judge who has his own feelings, her own feelings, about reckless.
Go to the jury.
Yeah,
that's a factual issue for the jury, isn't it, Ms. Carpenetti? Whether somebody acts recklessly is a question of fact for the jury, right?
Through the chair, yes, it is. It's for the fact finder. And I just wanted to mention, if you wouldn't mind me clarifying something about this amendment and the concern we have about our ability to prove it, and that's a little bit different. This is a specific intent crime. So when we would charge, if we would charge this, we would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that when the person assumed the false identity, he or she intended to commit a sex crime. Here's the problem. This is a property crime, basically, mm-hmm. and it is not a sex offender registration crime. And in our state, considering the problems we have with sex offenses, you have to get the specific permission of Rick Svobodny, head of the division, to negotiate a plea to a non-sex offender registration charge before changing a charge from a sex offender charge to a non-sex offender charge, because it's very tempting to do that when you're negotiating in a prosecution. But, you know, our governor is very serious about sex offenses, and we all know what a problem we have. So that Rick Svobodny has to be unavailable for somebody else, and that would be the head of the division, to approve a negotiated plea like that. We just don't do it because it's generally too serious.
Could this be corrected, Part A, Part B, if the reckless attempt is to damage a person's financial position? B, if the reckless attempt is an attempt to damage a person's financial position in the pursuit of a sex crime, and have the separation?
You know, Mr. Chairman, I was heartened when I heard that Legislative Affairs had advised Representative Lynn that false caller ID is covered by criminal impersonation in the second degree, because that's a Class A misdemeanor. And if you have the sex acts that would be undertaken in pursuit of this are already covered in our statute. So we could charge criminal impersonation in the second degree by the false caller ID, and then the underlying sex crime, which is, at least in this bill, it would be a Class A misdemeanor for online enticement. And that avoids this kind of crossover of property versus versus sex crimes that we're concerned about in this amendment.
Representative Grunberg?
I think we're going to all see spots in front of our eyes in the next 5 minutes unless we get some handle on this bill. Because we have this bill, we have 150, and then there's the bill that was read across today, which I think is a retread of the bill that came out last year and didn't make it through. And if you look at all these bills together, gentlemen.
You're talking the arson bill?
It has something about arson in there, and I couldn't figure out.
I found the word arson in there, and
absolutely.
I said this must be the only change.
I was looking, too, and as people who are interested in arson, you and I looked at that. But if we're not really careful, we will find that these bills, within their titles, will allow amendments and everything else throughout the whole criminal code, pretty much. And we'll find ourselves getting mired down. And I think that there has to be some kind of collegial bill management here. And I'm not sure how you and the members of the committee want to do it. But, I mean, this may be a great amendment or not, but we will soon find ourselves unable to pass anything out because things will come from here, there, and otherwhere. And at some point, I think we're going to have to cut and run here. Otherwise, nothing will get through. And I don't know how you want to do that.
Well, I tell you, what I'd like to do is the end of next week. I don't know if that's enough time, but I'm leaving, but you're staying.
I'll be here.
And you'll be here, and you have some people that you'll be able to work with.
Am I going to have any help from anybody else on this thing?
Ask, and heck, I'll assign them.
Oh, you? Good.
No, I'm not volunteering.
Well, I thought you were
volunteering. No, last time I volunteered, I went to Vietnam.
You and me both. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't do the whole... I mean, I'll do the best I can, but I can't do it all. I'll get another heart attack. I won't do that.
Well,
really, literally.
I have a staffer here.
She'll get one, too. I mean, we need to have... I need to have at least some staff or somebody. I'll leave that to you guys. I'm happy to do what I can, but I can't do more than I can do. I just can't.
You know what Representative Holmes' position is? She,
I don't know.
Well, I mean, is she available?
James, she's not here. Sure, she's available.
James would know, yeah. We can do anything to a person not here.
He just nodded. She's not.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I hate to put any words
in. But she's out of town, isn't she?
Well, she's out of town, but undoubtedly she would certainly volunteer me to work with Representative Gruenberg.
What a noble person you are.
Don't go too far here. Be careful.
If she would and you'll accept that, then that's okay with me.
Mr. Chair, with a caveat that I may make a recommendation that we really prune this down to the stuff that is non-controversial and will make its way through. And I'm happy to do that if I have your permission to be looking.
Well, certainly. That's what I think that's what all of us really want.
Okay.
Representative Lynn.
Yes, Mr. Chair. While we have Representative Ledge Legal here, would it be appropriate to ask him if he had any comments on what we've discussed so far today?
I think so. Ledge Legal.
We have a report from you. Go ahead.
All staff and officials have been invited to the workroom on Wednesday.
Invited does not mean committed, though, does it?
I have a couple commitments from agency and from staff.
Okay. So far, so good.
For the record, my name is Doug Gardner, Director of Legislative Legal Services, and I can answer any questions or if you just want a reaction to the discussion. I think maybe it's time to just cut to the chase of what this amendment does. And basically what the amendment does is says that if you commit criminal impersonation in the first degree and what you're trying to do is a sex crime, it's a B felony. That's just, and I thought Representative Gruenberg pretty much cut to the chase with his summary about 10 or 15 minutes ago, which I thought was accurate. So I guess the question is, is that what the committee wants to pass out? But I think that that's what Representative Lynn's language that he added would do. I guess I'd answer any other questions. I guess I have my own perspective as a former prosecutor, but I'm trying to leave that out. I'll just answer any questions you have.
Well, the language, actually, the language in 6a(2), which is the highlighted, the person violates blah, blah, 570, and the crime intended is a sex offense. And then it defines sex offense, given in 1263-100. That's pretty clear to me, if we haven't changed anything else. But we have spent a lot of time working our way through a bunch of mixed-up spaghetti parts, essentially getting to the same answer. Representative Gruenberg?
I would put the question, if I may ask.
Please.
Mr. Byrne, a question. What is the punishment for a Class B felony?
Class B felony would be, if it's a sex felony, would be 5 to 15 years. If not, it would be, and it would have a maximum of 99. If it is a non-sex felony, it would be, my recollection is it would be up to 10 years with a sentencing range of 1 to 3 years absent a mitigator or an aggravator on a first felony. And then there's different ranges as you move up.
What is the advantage to passing this? Couldn't you get at the underlying sex crime anyway, either for committed crime or an attempt or a conspiracy? What does this add that those, conspiracy is a criminal contract with one act in furtherance of the contract. And as I understand, as I recall, sex crimes can all be crimes of conspiracy in this state, I think. And then an attempt is a partial effort to commit a crime, but the crime is not completed. And then the completed crime could include both the crime itself and an accessory before the fact, somebody who aids and abets and assists in the commission of the crime. Given those fact that we have all of those, and we also have solicitation, which is encouraging somebody to commit the crime, that's yet another type of a crime. What is there in the Lynn amendment that is not already covered?
I would, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, my reaction to your comment is that the Lynn amendment would address a crime that hasn't happened in the sense of an actual sex act occurring. I mean, right. My colleagues at the Department of Law, I think, would be very aggressive, as I was when I was there, prosecuting a completed sex crime under Title 1141. Either sex. So Representative Lynn's amendment would address somebody who, with the caller ID, which was, I believe, the genesis of this, who makes the call, Mr. Riker talked about, tries to falsify an ID to try and lure someone.
Or an impersonation.
Or an impersonation, could be. And their intent is to commit a sex crime. So I suppose if they could do a number of things. They could have a caller ID. They could have some subsequent conversations with the victim.
Without getting into the details of that, what is there that would not, when could something like that occur yet not be prosecutable as an attempt? Because it sounds to be like, and I'm kind of looking at Ms. Carpinetti here too, it kind of looks to me, and maybe we want to have her come up, both of them, so if you don't mind.
No, it's fine.
Come on up. My question is, would there be any realistic factual situation where you would need to use this because you could not prove an attempt? And if the answer to that is no, then my question is, if it's a Class B felony, that might be a higher penalty than the attempt, which, as I recall, is half the penalty for the completed crime. My question is, wouldn't they generally be an attempt?
I think that, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I think when you're trying to add new criminal laws and you're trying to amend criminal laws, the criminal code covers a huge number of the hypothetical situations. So when Representative Lynn is trying to address this issue, he walks into an area where criminal law covers most of the conceivable conduct that could occur. I could conceive of a situation where a prosecutor might say, well, in order to prove an attempted sex crime, that prosecutor is going to have to show that somebody took a substantial step. A substantial step is well defined in the case law. And a substantial step may be driving their car somewhere, maybe going to the bank. It may be, I usually viewed a substantial step as some type of a physical manifestation of the person's intent. And so specific intent crimes and attempt crimes with a substantial step required can be very difficult. A person could potentially, under Representative Lynn's formulation of his amendment, could potentially make phone calls, encourage someone to meet at a park, and do other things where a prosecutor might conclude, and you know, I think we're talking about hypotheticals here, Representative Gruenberg,
right.
I think it's conceivable that a person could do something that doesn't constitute a specific, a substantial step, but conducts themselves in a way using the computer and the electronics nice. That would enable a prosecution. And I think, in Representative Lynn's prior comments, he discussed a possible way to resolve a case. You know, I think it's difficult resolving sex crime cases as non-sex offender registration cases, but I could conceive of a situation where the Department of Law might have a weak sex crime case. They may not be able to prove a substantial step, and they may look to other statutes like this to try and capture the conduct which was wrong and deceptive, as you pointed out, was the intent of which was to commit a sex crime. And so that's my answer.
I understand. And folks, that is, I think, a very reasonable answer. That answers my question. I assume you agree on that, Ms. Carpinetti?
Through the chair, I can't disagree with the possibility that there might be some scenario that this would apply to.
Then my next question, if I may, Mr. Chair. You said something that I'm not totally sure I fully appreciated, and that dealt with using a sex crime and getting off a sex type of a statute and the sex, the requirement to register. And that more had to do with the placement. Assuming we want to make this a crime, and I'm going to just assume that for the purpose of the discussion. Assuming we want to make that a crime, then it sounds like you might be thinking it would be better to place this into a sex crime statute rather than into this particular location in the code. Am I reading you right? Through the chair.
Through the chair, when I was talking about reducing a crime or negotiating a crime to a crime that would be in this section, my point was that as the Department of Law has a policy against reducing crimes from sex offenses to crimes that are not sex offenses for sex offender registration, because it's very, very tempting to do that. Defendants want to do that because they don't want to have to register as a sex offender, but which is why this policy was adopted several years ago that you have to get permission from the Rixabadi.
If that is the case, then, Mr. Chair, I suggest that when we look at this as a working group, I'd like both of you to be thinking in these terms and two things. Number one, if we do this, where it should go to follow the department's policy. And number two, what the appropriate level of the crime ought to be. Because I think we've made some, at least in my mind, made some progress here. They see the need why this could be helpful in certain factual situations. But the question should be, it should be within the sex offender statutes to be within the department's policy. And then I have a question, which should it be a Class B felony or something else? And I'm just going to, I'm sort of indicating those are some of the areas I'm going to be interested in. Does that seem like a reasonable way of proceeding? No, yes, or what?
There is no unreasonable way.
If I may ask, what is your response to that?
I think, through the chair, that's a reasonable approach.
I don't disagree. I'm happy to work with you and anybody else, Representative Grunberg.
There you go. Yeah. High-end talent.
If you can remind me, we've gotten to this point. That'll be. Is that okay with you, Representative?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So a lot of work to do, and we're certainly not going to pass this amendment in its current form.
Are we going to look at other amendments and stuff now?
I think the other ones have all passed.
Oh, they did.
A2 yeah. through A7 passed. We held A1. A1 changed to M1.
There was one, Ms. Carpinetti, I had a question about the use of the term embarrassed, and that was in... Yeah, maybe that was in the bill itself, in section, one of the sections in here. Where is that, Sarah? Is that in section 7? Here we are, page 3, line 24. And I had raised this issue last time, the use of the term embarrass. And I had Ms. Carpinetti, could Ms. Carpinetti come back up? If it's okay, I had asked if she had was able to think of anything that might be a little stronger than embarrassed, because you could just embarrass somebody, and that's a pretty low felony, a pretty low standard, particularly if you're going to criminalize them.
Well, prior to that is the word annoy. You know, all of those, golly, what annoys someone is irrelevant to someone else. And there's nothing you can do that can embarrass you, and some people are embarrassed if you look at them and stare too long.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
But it, you know, the rest of it is really the kicker, is that what's the intent of embarrassing and annoying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ms. Carpinetti, what if we even didn't have with the intent to annoy or embarrass another person? If we just say, if you distribute electronic photographs or video that depicts all those parts for a minor under 16.
Mr. Chairman, that was essentially the format of the original bill. This was changed as a result of the work group we had, because that causes problems in terms of baby pictures and various other accidental depictions.
Right.
So that's the reason that a culpable mental state was inserted into this section.
Right. Representative Gruenberg.
At one point, there was a suggestion that, and annoy does concern me too, but embarrass, something stronger than that would be something like humiliate. Mm-hmm. And that would satisfy me. Ms. Carpinetti was saying Mr. Svobodny thought that was too high a standard.
Through the chair, I mentioned that word to my boss, and Rick Svobodny, and he said he thought more people understood the term embarrassed, but he I don't think he felt strongly about switching humiliate or embarrass.
Did you want to just add humiliate, or
no.
You want to substitute?
Well, we're going to have to work on the term annoy, because you've raised a really good point there. I would move that we change on page 3, line 24, the term embarrassed to humiliate. And that we may come up with a better term, but at least that gets us going in the direction I see.
I think humiliate's a pretty high standard. You can annoy me, you can embarrass me. You're going to have to find something out about me. I don't want anybody to ever know that's truthful. Well, no, I guess it doesn't have to be truthful. Is it helpful to substitute humiliate, or what did Mr. Svobodny say?
Through the chair, it's helpful just to get a you know, agreement, because if it is, you know, to reach a compromise. I would say annoy is a term that's been used in the harassment statutes for years and hasn't caused a problem. So we have history with harassment is with the intent to annoy or harass another person. So this is the same. So I don't think we would have a problem with using that word.
Harass. Annoy or harass.
Annoy.
I will withdraw my motion.
Because to be honest, if annoying is enough, you don't need to humiliate. You're already there with annoy. But I like
harass.
So you want to remove embarrass? So annoy or harass?
Yeah. May I withdraw my motion?
Certainly.
Okay. Then I guess this would be technically.
Did you actually move it?
Yes, I did. Susan said I did. I did. So I
mean, withdraw the motion.
Withdraw Amendment 1. And Amendment 2 would.
That was 2, wasn't it?
That was 2, and then this one was.
Okay. So Amendment, this is Amendment 3 then?
Yes.
Okay. Would be to delete embarrass on line 24, page 3, and put harass.
Okay. Amendment number 3, harass. There is an objection from Representative Keller. Representative Keller?
Well, I mean, I think we're going over the replaw on the same field here, but intent is, I don't see a problem with a low standard or low easily proved. I think the problem is going to be proving intent, not proving that the intent was harassment versus embarrassment. I see it as a, I'm fine with embarrassed.
I look at it differently. I have to for embarrassed to work, I have to show you that it embarrassed me. For harassed to work, I think it's easier, it's an easier threshold to say, I was embarrassed. I'm sorry, I was harassed. I mean, people recognize that more easily than embarrassed.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
Isn't harass a series of actions rather than just
more
one thing?
More than one? Yeah, I've heard that too.
If I could just make one comment, I would, just for a suggestion, I would prefer the word humiliate to harass, because annoy or harass is the culpable mental state for the crimes of harassment. And it would be good to have a little separation, I think.
I see. May I inquire?
Do you want to withdraw the amendment?
I may. there are cases, I'm quite sure, in Alaska that construe the term annoy or harass. I'm thinking of a case called Anna Skett, which was a harassing phone calls to a policeman, and the Supreme Court said, it's not enough to just annoy a policeman with harassing phone calls. You got to really do something more. That was many years ago. I was involved in the court system then. So I know there are words. Those words have definite meanings in the law. For humiliate and embarrass, are those terms as well defined? I'm happy to do humiliate if you think that would be easier to deal with.
Well, I'm just concerned about them being so similar to the crime of harassment that I'm wondering whether we need to have a separate crime at all for this.
We need degrees of separation before we.
But I guess I would like to think about it. I looked up humiliate in the dictionary. I can't remember what the definition was, but it's not a confusing one. It's something that I think the courts could apply without difficulty.
There's some people you cannot humiliate. They're already the.
Well, you know, actually, if you look at it, you have to intend to do it when you're acting. It doesn't say that you actually do. It's the intention of this. The harm obviously is going to be there, but
it occurs to maybe in the case law around annoy. The word annoy, does that entail proof that the person was annoyed, or because it humiliate? You can humiliate and get no response, right, like you said, or you can humiliate and get embarrassment. And I was wondering if annoy, whose perspective is that from there? The victim?
Well, it's from the actors, from the defendant's perspective.
If you say you're annoyed, that's probably good enough, you know, right? I mean, because, like I say, again, the focus on the intent.
If the victim is annoyed, that's one thing, but we'd also have to prove that the defendant acted with the intent to do so,
right,
which is different.
Just a second. According to Webster's Ninth New Collegiate Dictionary, they do have the word humiliate in here, and basically it says to reduce to a lower position in one's own eyes or others' eyes. Then they go with mortify and see humiliation, etc. So one's own eyes or others' eyes. In other words, either side. If my goal is to humiliate you, it's a crime. If you feel humiliated, it's a crime.
Well, it would be the intent to make that person feel that way. And I think the person's feelings, the lowering or the harm would be not only in the victim's eyes or feelings, but in other people besides, you know, public peers.
May I inquire?
Representative Gruenberg?
What would the Department of Law prefer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, we would prefer annoy or embarrass, but our second choice would be annoy or humiliate.
You prefer embarrass to humiliate, or
yes.
Is that what you said?
Yes.
So the existing language.
Yes.
My only concern is that somebody could be embarrassed or at least somebody could intend to embarrass somebody when there's hardly any harm at all. It's like a juvenile prank. I'm going to show your baby picture here, one teenager says to another. And that would be an embarrassment to a teenage girl, I'd say. It would do it to a teenage boy also. But very little harm, and then you're criminalizing him for that. And that was my concern. Mm-hmm. And that's, I thought that it cast the net too broadly. Mm-hmm. on the other hand, I don't want it to be impossible to use the statute because the term is too hard to prove.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I think under the definition that you just read of humiliate, that would be something that we could work with.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I'm going to withdraw Amendment Number 3 and go back to Amendment Number 2, reoffer Amendment Number 2, which would use the term humiliate.
Okay. And, you know, in the context of this whole paragraph, sending an explicit image of a minor, commit the offense of sending an explicit image of a minor if the person with intent to annoy or embarrass another person distributes an electronic photograph or video that depicts the genitals, anus, female breast, or other of that other person taken when that person was a minor under 16. It seems like almost any word in there would be suitable.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
To me, there are three levels here. You know, annoy is like, you know, you're annoying people by just doing something like that. Embarrass could be, you know, we're all embarrassed from time to time. But humiliate is much worse. To be humiliated to me is much worse than being embarrassed. It's certainly being annoyed. It's three levels to me. Annoy, embarrass, humiliate.
And remember, it all has to do with distributing electronic photographs.
Right.
That they don't like.
Humiliate. There's more than annoyment. Or embarrassment.
Same one we read.
Oh, that's what you read. I was looking at belittle.
Well, that's made a lot of progress.
You
want to go back to Amendment Number 2, is it?
I ask unanimous consent to withdraw Amendment Number 3, which would have been harass,
okay,
and substitute Amendment Number 2, which is humiliate.
Without objection, we have Amendment Number 2 in front of us, striking embarrass and adding humiliate.
Yes,
is that the way it reads?
Yeah.
We've had a lot of conversation on this. Ms. Carbonetti, that tolerable, satisfactory, better, worse, not as good.
I think to the extent that my opinion is worth anything, I think it's fine.
Doesn't annoy you.
Pardon?
Doesn't annoy you.
Okay, so we have the amendment in front of us. Is there an objection? Representative Thompson, you have an objection?
I have no objection.
So there is no objection. Representative Keller, we have no objection so far to deleting embarrass and substituting humiliate. If there's an objection, it would be yours. Do you have one?
I object only for just one comment, and maybe a little bit more discussion. Couldn't we just take out both words and put in harm?
Put in what?
Intent harm. To harm another person.
And no,
that's interesting. What do you think about that?
Through the chair, that would concern me because I don't know what it would mean in this context. Would it be physical or mental or psychological harm? I think it would be better to specify.
May I inquire?
Because harm is, I guess the lawyers could battle that one out,
yeah.
But humiliate would be more difficult.
I think humiliate would be easier for us to deal with.
Okay.
Harm, you know, there's so many levels of harm that it would be very difficult in this. I mean, I think it's reasonable, it makes sense, but I think it would be very difficult to.
You know, we're used to using the word, he stepped on my toe, God, it hurts, you've harmed me.
Uh-huh.
But you haven't humiliated me. Mm-hmm. And so humiliate is a little more focused. Representative Gruenberg? You're done? Representative Keller?
Withdrawn and objection.
Objections withdrawn, seeing and hearing no objection, the Amendment Number 2 is adopted.
May I inquire?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, was working on the capital budget in my, for my district, which we're still working on. Did we have anybody online on Section 9 from the booksellers group or whatever that was called? Mr. Chair, did anybody call in from that group on Section 9? No, they didn't. Okay. Well, as we're proceeding in the working group, I will attempt to get those guys online because we haven't had any input from them.
Okay.
And did that complete all of the stuff that we had left? Was there anything else? Okay, well, we'll pick it up if there's anything.
And we have two people online. We have a public defender, Quinlan Steiner, and we have Office of Public Advocacy, Dan Baer, who's substituting for Rachel Levitt and Beth Trimmer. If we have questions that we want to go there. And this has to adjourn on time because we have another meeting at 3. So, where are we? We're done with detailed questions like that, and as it stands, we've talked about, and I do appreciate Representative Gruenberg's willingness to sort out a lot of the details. We have the remainder of this week and all of next week before we finally come to bringing it forward for a vote. Representative Thompson?
Thank you. So my understanding is that we don't have a problem with the bill itself. Our problems are with the amendment, and that's what you're going to rework?
The Lynn Amendment.
Yes.
And I'm also going to hear from any of the people we haven't heard from that we should have, and I will bring a full report to you guys.
Great.
And I'm going to ask Sarah to please ASAP set a meeting of the group on this.
Full report with recommendations.
Oh yeah,
yep, that's what we're after.
Now we also have 127 or 150.
150,
yeah.
Right?
I see. Okay, so we're going to do this. That 150 on Wednesday and 127 on Friday.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's fine with me. If we you put it on the calendar.
Oh, we have Monday also.
We'll do. We'll work then. And if I have to work on the weekend, I'll work on the weekend.
Oh, Thursday, thank you. We'll give you a time and a half. Don't worry.
Thanks.
With that, are there any more comments for the committee? Seeing and hearing none, we are adjourned.